everybody. Hello, everybody. How are you today? I'm good. Thanks. Thanks for asking. So we just got through this crazy few hours of a storm. Weather is so much fun, isn't it? So we've had really cold weather here in New York City, 1 degree, 2 degrees, that's Fahrenheit. And today it was up in the 50s, but like blowing, it was, I felt like I was in the Wizard of Oz in that Twister. But now it's all calm. It's quiet outside. It's quiet inside. I'm ready to talk about food with you. Now, first thing I wanted to bring up is I just found out about this. I'm really excited about it. There is a documentary. There's the, actually, it's the fifth episode of a new docu-series. And it's, maybe you've seen some of it already. I have to admit that I have not. But it's part of Truth and Power. And the fifth episode is a new docu-series narrated by, wait a minute, I'm going to get this right. It's the fifth episode that I want to talk about. It's all of the series has been narrated by Maggie Gyllenhaal. I love her. She's a really great actor. And this particular episode is on a group of animal rights activists who became the targets of government and law enforcement intimidation for their efforts to expose and protest corporations' controversial treatment of animals. It's called Activists or Terrorists, and investigative journalist Will Potter and punk rock academic Ryan Shapiro show how they are using freedom of information laws to uncover how the United States government uses harsh policies and the label of terrorist to silence animal rights activists. Now, we've heard from Will Potter. We've heard quite a bit from him and other people on these freedom of these not freedom of information laws. Thanks goodness we have them, but these laws that are labeling animal activists terrorists. Now, it's part of, it can be seen on Pivot. I'm not a big television person, but I Googled Pivot and Truth and Power, and I discovered that I can actually watch it this Friday, February 19th at 10 p.m. Eastern Time. So you'll have to Google Pivot and see if you see it in your area. But I would really recommend it. I think it's going to be awesome, and I'm so glad that it's screening on television. So that's the animal or... Okay, I got to slow down here. It's called Activists or Terrorists. It's part of the Truth and Power 10-part documentary series on Pivot this Friday. Phew! Okay, let's move on and let's get to the meat of the program. I want to bring on my guest, Lee Chantel. It's early in the morning for her, so I'm glad that she woke up to talk to us all the way from Australia. She's a published author, international speaker and consultant, singer, songwriter, and blogger who lives mostly in Brisbane. And she has run the online vegan community, Viva La Vegan, since 2005, bringing positive action, information, and vegan outreach to a worldwide audience. She gives lectures, workshops, consultations, and coaching for understanding social media, staging effective events, and vegan health and lifestyle. Welcome to It's All About Food.
Thank you, Karen. How are you?
I'm good. I always get chills when I talk to people so far away.
How come?
It just makes the world so small.
It's wonderful, really, isn't it?
It is wonderful. And I also love feeling that there's a small and ever-growing community out there with other people who are passionate about doing what I'm passionate about. And that's this vegan activism, online vegan activism, and doing it for quite a while. So you're celebrating the 10th anniversary of Viva La Vegan.
Yes, pretty full on, really, when you think about it.
Yeah.
We just had a party, actually, on Saturday night. It's Wednesday morning here now. And we had a party for the anniversary and for my new vegan athletes book. So it was really fun and made a lot of food and had some good music and good people and just a really good vibe. It was really nice, actually.
It is, and this is the future. I want to believe this is the wave of the future. We're building a community of the future.
I hope so.
Yeah, and I think we should just continue to celebrate. There's a lot of things out there to be sad and frustrated about, but I just like moving forward, celebrating the things that we have to celebrate. So congratulations to you.
Thank you. Yeah, I think it was really important just to be in the moment and take the time to celebrate and to go, hey, I did this. This is a really cool goal. I'm going to celebrate this, because we're so busy in our lives. And I don't know if you're like me, but I'm always on to the next thing before actually appreciating what I've done and what I've achieved. So it was really important for me just to take stock and take the time to acknowledge the success. So I'm really glad I did that, actually.
And I'm glad you just brought that up, because I can't tell you how many times my partner, Gary, and I have sat down for a moment and said, hey, wait a minute, we just did something amazing. We're now working on the next thing, and we never took a moment to celebrate or pat ourselves on the back or breathe or anything. It's just this continual, I don't know what it is, to do more. It's never enough.
I know, exactly. And I know I'm guilty of that. Most of us are. And in particular with the area that we're in, with like veganism and animal rights in particular, it's so hard to get some really good achievements sometimes, or to actually appreciate them. And I've been vegan, I'll be vegan 20 years next year. Woo! And when you see how many things have changed, and you know that people know the word at least, or some version of the word, that's massive in comparison to 20 years ago when you'd say vegan and you know people would be blank. They have no idea what you're talking about.
Exactly. I don't know about down in Australia, but we're at a point now where in commercials on television, they make fun of vegans. And I think this is really positive, because they know we're out there and they're getting scared of us, actually.
Yeah, I hope so.
Great. So tell me what we can find at Viva La Vegan, and how you've grown over the last 10 years with this online community.
Well, it started originally, I finished a naturopathy, nutrition and Western herbal medicine course at a college here, and I wanted to release a recipe calendar. I'd always wanted to do that, and I thought, oh, I'll just do a recipe calendar first, only 12 recipes, should be easy. A friend from school came up with the title Viva La Vegan, and I released that at the end of 2005. And then I'd had a website, myleashontel.com website for my music, and I just thought, oh, I'll have another website. And then people would ask me, oh, you should put some more recipes up, or some articles, or you should do some videos, or talk to this person. And honestly, it grew so organically over that time. And when I think back to some of those things, it's really bizarre how it's grown. And we've just relaunched maybe a month ago, I think it was, and it's a lot more condensed, because a few months back there was so much on the website and it was just a bit overwhelming. So now I've just broken it down into information and articles and blogs, and we've also got – it's in a more easy-to-use format, so you can look in under sort of search terms or keywords like weddings or animals or environment. And then we've got a lot of recipes and demonstrations. I do a lot of videos on YouTube. There's some books that I sell on my store, and just some information about my speaking, training, consulting. And, so much information.
It's amazing how much information can arrive on a website, and then you have to figure out, well, what do I do with all of this stuff?
Well, that was my December, actually. It was going through 10 years of stuff from my website and going, okay, where do I put this? What section does it go into? Do I need it still? Do I need to update it? So that was actually a lot more work than I sort of thought it would be.
Oh, yeah. It's almost like moving and yeah, going through drawers and deciding what to take with you and what not to. And it's
that's so true.
I mean, imagine it wasn't fun, but at the same time, you probably got to see, wow, I did all of this. Wow.
Yes. Yeah. And I had a lot of writers over the years too. So it was really good to see, oh, so-and-so wrote this, 5 years ago, and I really liked this one, and I remember how popular this was. And, yeah, it was just really nice to go through.
Yeah, so you started, it says here on your little website logo, since 2005.
Yes.
And there wasn't a lot going on the internet back then. We didn't really have Facebook. I know Facebook started in 2004, but it really wasn't available for all of us in the public, I don't think, until 2006 or so. Mm. And, that was an amazing way for people to connect and get information out for no cost, really.
Mm.
And things started to grow from there. So you were, right there from the beginning of that big explosion.
Yeah, definitely. And we had MySpace back then, actually. I was all about MySpace.
That's right. That's
yeah,
right.
We loved MySpace. I had one for my music and one for V and stuff, so I was on there quite a bit.
Okay, yeah. I remember that. I never could quite figure that out.
Yeah, you either liked it or you didn't, and that's when I learnt basic coding as well, and, I thought it was very spammy, to be honest, and it took forever to load pages because people would just spam your wall all the time, but, yeah, I really liked it. It was a really good beginning of how the web would sort of go forward in regards to small sort of communities connecting online, but, yeah, it was... 10 years ago, in Australia in particular, we had a lot of the animal rights and those sort of groups, animal liberation in particular in Australia, and a lot of the vegan vegetarian societies. But we didn't really have anyone who did similar to what I do now. And I find that really interesting to tell people because everyone's like, there's so many vegan bloggers or lifestyle blogs and stuff. But 10 years ago, there wasn't. And mine was the first website that was not aligned with any group that had not only recipes but lifestyle-based stuff. So it wasn't – it was telling people, you could get makeup, you could get toiletries, you could go to travel here, and it was, how things are now, but it was quite, new at the time.
I'm looking at your recipe and demos.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some icons here that say gluten-free, nut-free, soy-free, sugar-free, paleo. Do these apply to all your recipes or certain recipes?
No, most of them have those icons on them. So if you click on a different icon, like say the paleo one, they'll come up with all the paleo options. But paleo vegan, obviously.
Yes, obviously. The way they really ate back in the Paleolithic era was like paleo vegan.
Yeah. Sorry to butt in. I read this article recently about, I can't remember who did it actually, but they found tools for grinding grains back in that Paleolithic area. And how the paleo people don't eat grains supposedly. And I just had quite a laugh about that.
Yeah. Oops.
That was a scientific finding.
Yeah. It's crazy. I live in 2012, and I'm moving forward and taking the best from what I know now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
I mean, the Paleolithic era was another time.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
And it's a hard one because so many people, it's just like any fad, to be honest, I think, and people get caught up in it. And I don't think it helps that it's linked with that CrossFit thing either and people that are really into working out. And there's massive movement over here. Like we've got a lot of 24-hour gyms and a lot more people seem to care about the way they look or the way, exercising more and things like that. But I don't think many people understand the right fuels to be eating or even just what clean eating is. Like so many people use the term clean eating and you're like, I don't think I'd call that clean.
I know what you mean. Yeah. Okay. So I want to know, you've been doing this for 10 years, what are the most popular recipes on your site? What are people looking for?
Oh, I think the most popular things are, say, like the cheese, my...
Exactly.
I've got a cheese sauce there that I make out of just four ingredients: nutritional yeast, some sort of oil, some sort of rice or some sort of flour, and other things, some sort of milk. So I make it like a gluten-free, healthier version, but that's just how I prefer. That's probably one of the most popular, actually, because so many people really... I know it's a lot easier the last 5 years in particular to get cheeses, but a lot of them are quite expensive, in particular over here, if we ship your sort of food over to Australia. So you could easily pay $10 to $20 for a packaged cheese over here, Australian dollars. And, you know, I've been to the States quite a few times, and I know how much the food costs over there, like in your sort of supermarkets or bigger stores. And it just, I cannot buy those sort of foods here because I know, oh, that normally costs $5 in America. I'm not going to spend $20 on that here.
Oh, absolutely. But, and some of them, some of the ones that have been around for a while aren't even very good.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm honestly not a cheese person. I never have been. It's not, I don't need it. It's not essential in my sort of diet. I know a lot of people love that. I know a lot of people crave it. And it's good that there are those options nowadays. But I also think, you know, we need to be relying on things that we can make ourselves instead of the sort of processed vegan foods. As much as vegan food is better than the standard diet on, you know, just a basic level, there's so many more products that are vegan nowadays that just aren't healthy and are very processed. And I just hope we can move away a bit from those things.
I really agree, and I'm glad you're saying all these things. I'm just laughing to myself here because on my nonprofit website, responsibleeatingandliving.com, our number one recipe forever and leaps and bounds ahead of any other recipe is our almond mozzarella cheese. And it has the nutritional yeast. It has some oil. It's nut. It's almond-based. And it's very good. But, you know, I don't make it very often. And then right under that are, like, cookies and cakes.
That's another thing. Sweet.
Yeah, that's what people are looking for. So, you know, I keep trying to put out this whole food, plant-based, nutritious love for really healthy foods. People are still looking for cheese and sweets.
Exactly. And a lot of fake meat stuff. Like, a lot of people love all the fake meat things. So, and I'm not saying never have that to people, and I think it's an amazing transition food, a lot of those foods. But I just think it's one of those eat every now and then foods, like maybe once a week, if that.
Yes, absolutely. Okay, now you have a book out.
Yes.
I want to talk about that. You've interviewed over 100 athletes, vegan athletes.
Yes.
And put all this information into a book. What I first wanted to say is there seems to be a lot of continuity with the responses in terms of what they're eating and why they came to this place of being vegan as an athlete.
Yeah. I think I like the idea because I think there's so many – I think there's more different people, like different reasons they're coming to it. Like some people are like, I don't care about my health. I just care about the animals, or don't look at my diet. It's pretty bad, or, you know, those sort of things. And then there's other people that are just raw all the time, never have oil or never have sugar and things like that. It's quite I think it's quite different. But, yeah, then with the food, it's lots of greens, lots of beans, whole foods, really. That's what the majority of people in the book are saying to eat, and stuff that's lighter, I guess. Lots of quinoa and oats get mentioned, and greens. Some people say, you know, about the grains versus not eating grains, but, you know, you've got both sides in that. I think it's really interesting how many different types of people there are in it, actually. And I love the fact, because I come from an animal rights position, and that's why I went vegan in the first place 20 years ago, but a lot of the people in the book are more health-based and lifestyle or fitness-based and exercise, and I find that interesting to learn from those sort of people, because I think, like, the past 5 years in particular with the use of the term vegan, I think that should mean plant-based in a lot of cases, what a lot of people are using online and especially with the media. So it's really interesting to find out what people do and what people eat. And yeah, the book's got 111 people, and I made a pact when I first started 4 or so years ago. If I got 100 people to interview, I'd put it into a book form. So I had 135 all up. And yeah, such a big task, but I love it when, you know, we just did the launch and just looking through it. It's so easy to use and to read. You can just flick to a page and read about one person, or you can just read all the quotes or, you know, the tips. And, yeah, I think it's really good. And it's, I know for myself when I was editing it, it was inspiring to me. And a lot of people said it's really inspiring to them too. So that's really good. And I hope it gets to more non-vegans.
Absolutely. I just wanted to, I grabbed a few things that I wanted to mention from different people in the book just to give people a taste and things that made me smile. So you interviewed Atsuyuki Katsuyama, the vegan barefoot ultra marathoner.
Yes.
And there was the question about what is the most common question that people ask when they find out that you are vegan and how you respond. So it says here, people, how do you take protein? I, many kinds of plant-based foods. How do you take your protein? People, meat. I, do you know how much protein you need in one day? People, no. I, if you do not know it, how can you say you are taking enough protein? People, question mark. I know how much protein I need to take in one day, and all the vegetables and fruits can cover that amount, and I run 100 miles too. I love that.
He's great. I actually met, we call him Kay for short, and I met him in Bangkok. Him and his partner run a vegan cafe called Bonita in Bangkok. And, yeah, he's a great guy, really enthusiastic. And, yeah, I love some of the stuff that people don't speak English as their first language. Had to edit a few bits so it was more readable in some cases. But, I love that. And a lot of people have that issue, like, where do you get your protein? And they have no idea how much protein you need or why it's a big deal. They just know,
or what it is. They don't even know what it is.
Exactly. And that was ridiculous in my book. I think there was like 70% of the people I interviewed still get asked where they get their protein, which I think is absolutely ridiculous. Like, you can see these people. Some of these people in this book are bodybuilders and people that work out all the time, guys and girls who have massive bulging muscles. And I can just imagine the conversation, like, where do you get your protein? They're like, I think I'm doing all right, you know?
Exactly. I just don't want to go into my opinion of humans as a species.
But here all day.
We could. Another one, Betsy Bailey, vegan volleyballer. She wrote, her first year playing in France, her coach, when he found out she was vegan, told her she must eat pasta every day for energy. And she told him that if he ever notices she's lacking in energy, then he can tell her what to eat. And since then, she's had a few teammates actually go vegan and on and on. But, I mean, exactly. They don't have a clue.
No, most people don't. And that's the issue with, in particular from the fitness industry, I've noticed, and people, or even doctors, like supposed health industries, a lot of people don't have any nutritional background or anything like that. And I know I know when I was studying, which is over 10 years ago now, but we I know the fact, something like doctors only have to learn 5 hours of nutrition, and they're not, and they're like an elective, like you don't necessarily have to go to those hours. And I just remember thinking, that's ridiculous. So many people, especially say like my parents' generation, would go to doctors and just have everything, whatever the doctor says, that's what it's going to be. And you know, they have no nutritional qualifications, and there's so many people that just sort of say, oh yeah, I was vegan, but my doctor told me not to because I need this, this, this. And I think that's really sad. And it is, it's so really sad. Bad. It's really bad when people just don't have, I think also another issue is people don't do their own research anymore. And that does annoy me just on a blanket level with society. You just see something online, you just believe it. And there's a lot of people who just believe whatever they see online, and you know, if someone looks hot and if someone's lost a heap of weight, then oh, I'm going to believe them with what's going to work for me as well. So that's a hard one that we somehow need to solve. I don't know how though.
I know people don't know how to research. They just go online, they find something that they like, and then they become an expert. And it doesn't work that way, everybody.
No, definitely not.
Yeah, well, Lee Chantel, congratulations on 10 years of your vegan activism and all of that stuff you put up on your website and your new book. I want to thank you for talking with me and wish you the very best.
Thank you very much, Karen.
Yeah, I just anything else you want to add before we go? Oh, that was too late of me. Okay, so much for that. I want to keep moving here. So on this program, I always like to say, tune in love. It's all about tuning in love here as we're tuning in live, right? And the next part of the show is really, I think, a great example of tuning in love. And you'll understand in a minute, I was going to have Leanne Campbell on the program to talk about Global Roots, her Total Health Conference. And at the last minute, she couldn't make it, and she got two wonderful people to take her place, and the first one is Del Saruf. Are you here, Del?
Hello, Karen. How are you?
Hi. How are you? I'm great.
I'm great.
So I wanted to continue with the same tuning in love. Here you are. You're helping out Leanne in the very last minute, and that's great teamwork and lovely. And
I'm a big fan of Leanne Campbell and the Campbell family in general, so I'm glad to do my part, especially as I help them to spread their message of tuning in love and creating a healthier world through a compassionate cause.
Yeah, well, I have this goal to have the entire Campbell family on my show. I like to have dynasties on my program, and we have a few vegan dynasties.
Yeah, this is a good one, isn't it?
Yeah, I can't believe that. We're going to be talking with Dr. Campbell a little bit, but he's has wonderful children, and they're all doing great things for this plant-based world.
Yeah, I would love to say, you know, I love my family, but if they were helping me in that kind of supporting way, I would definitely feel some heavy love.
Yeah, heavy love. I like that. Okay, I've told you this before, but when I think of you, I think of all the great things you do with cauliflower that people don't really think cauliflower is for.
Yeah, I know, right? I think cauliflower is the magic food, as much as kale. And I know I get in trouble every time I say that. Kale and sweet potatoes are up there, but man, I can do some fun things with cauliflower.
Yeah, so I get a weekly delivery from a company called Go Organic NYC. We just got our delivery today, and I've got a little cauliflower in there. What should I do with it?
Well, you know, I'm always going to tell you to puree it. Now, although, have you seen lately, they're doing cauliflower pizza crust, so they're kind of grating it and using it as a pizza crust, but I haven't tried that yet, so I can't speak to it. But I tell you what, I make a cauliflower cream sauce, and just like any traditional cream sauce, you can do with it what you will. So in my Forks Over Knives cookbook, there's a spinach and sweet potato lasagna. And so I made a spinach cream sauce using pureed cauliflower, a little bit of pine nuts, spinach, thyme, some shallots, and garlic, and the flavor is amazing, and it has that rich, creamy mouthfeel, but without the dairy. And in a world where, I have to say, people are kind of leery of tofu, I'm a fan of tofu, and I think in moderation it's a perfectly fine food, but in a world where people are leery of tofu, here's an alternative that also puts another vegetable on the plate, right?
I like that. You know, we just jumped in here, and I didn't really give any background to who you are, although I want to thank that everybody out there knows Chef Del Sroof. But we've had him on the program before. He is the author of The Forks Over Knives, the cookbook, and also Better Than Vegan. And you've also lost a lot of pounds, and I'm wondering, how's that going these days?
It's up and down. It's going well right now. Winter's always hard for me, and you know, I've been working on, I worked for years on just getting the diet right, and did have done well at that. But you know, part of being healthy overall and being a healthy individual is dealing with the total package. And so for me, as someone who grew up on binge and yo-yo diets and was an emotional eater, and I'm going to talk about that at the Global Roots Conference, being an emotional eater had other consequences that sort of came to the surface. And I've been working really hard, and I'm really happy that I've at least come to the level of consciousness to be able to do so. But working hard on my emotional eating, and it's paying off. So I'm on track. Which means I'm losing weight again, and at a slow and steady pace, and I'm happy to be where I'm at.
Good. That sounds good. All right, let's just talk a little bit about this Total Health Conference, because that's one of the reasons why Leanne was going to be on the program, and one of the reasons why she's not today, because I understand she had to run down to the Dominican Republic.
Yeah, getting ready for that. It's a big event. And, you know, my first time there was in October. I did 4 cooking classes and over the 8 days and helped oversee the food and everything. And it's at a beautiful, beautiful resort. But there's a lot that goes into it, because putting on a program like this in a country like the Dominican Republic takes a little bit of give and take. In other words, it's not they don't have all of the same kinds of tools there that we have here, and so I'm sure planning that takes a little bit of effort every time on her part.
I was curious about that, because I was remembering just before this program started, and I was thinking what we were going to be talking about. I did some food demos in Brazil for the International Vegetarian Congress, more than 10 years ago. I'm not sure when it was. And, you know, I put some recipes together that I like, didn't really think much about it, sent off my grocery list, and I show up in Brazil. And, you know, they didn't have some of the ingredients that I thought were just normal. And I don't even remember what those are anymore.
Right.
But
right.
Well, quick thinking on my feet, what am I doing in this food demo when I don't have all the ingredients?
I had the same encounter in the Dominican Republic at a beautiful resort that is absolutely seems like it would have just everything that you would ever want. But a couple of things that I ran into is they didn't have, you know, the kitchen was used to doing a large production deal. So the basics of pots and pans, they do everything by weight. They didn't even have measuring spoons. So I'm doing a baking demo, and I couldn't even measure my baking powder or my spices out for that. I had to guess. Luckily, that all turned out well after 26 years of being in the kitchen. They didn't have, you know, you won't find silken tofu in the Dominican Republic. You might if you go to Santiago, if you're in one of the major cities, but we're at a resort on the north coast. So we had to do a little bit of give and take and make it work, and it did.
I visit Costa Rica from time to time, and it's hard finding dark leafy green vegetables there. And it's a little more popular in certain locations where the gringos, unfortunately, are taking over.
Right.
And they demand it, and they grow some on the organic farms. But I was wondering what's the green scene in the Dominican Republic?
You know, we didn't see, you know, here we start making salads out of every kind of green imaginable, from baby kale to the mixed greens that you find, and on olive oak leaf and all of those. You don't see so much of that there. You'll see a couple of basic things that they have on hand. But I didn't see, like, chard, and they have their own greens. And they have some, actually, some some produce I've never seen before. I got to go to an organic produce stand up in the mountains, and the person who was our guide that was with us kept buying and feeding us these unusual fruits and such, and I was in heaven trying all these new things. But when it came down, if I wanted to get a kale salad, you weren't going to see that as readily. You had to really rearrange that ahead of time to make that happen. So, but you know what they did have is, the traditional diet down there is a very starchy diet. So they ate bananas every day for breakfast, some sort of a mashed green banana, and then lots of squash and sweet potatoes and things like that are very abundant there.
There are some fruits that taste like sweet potato that are, you don't have to cook them. It's like they're already cooked.
Oh, wow.
They're just like a fruit.
Uh-huh. Well, I was amazed at how much like a potato an underripe banana tastes like when it's boiled and then mashed.
Mm-hmm.
It was a lot like a potato. You could probably feed it to some people who may not know the difference.
And there are lots of different kinds of bananas. You know, we just see one kind here, and there are more bananas that probably taste more like potato because they're starchier.
Right. Yeah, I'm sure that's the case. And, you've seen a few in some of the organic stores, like the small red bananas that you see and such. But I've heard the same thing, that there are tons of different varieties out there that we never see. And that's typical of, the American diet. When we travel abroad, I think the exciting thing is to open up your taste bud and to embrace what is new to you, because we get the same old thing here. And I kind of like a little bit of adventure in my eating and welcoming new experiences and new taste buds.
Yeah, I agree. Nature's may actually make us have more varieties, at least in terms of the banana. I've been hearing this for decades, that the Cavendish banana is not going to be able to survive much longer because there are these viruses going around that are knocking them all out. So we're probably going to be seeing more different kinds of bananas, which will be nice.
I do a banana in my smoothie every day, but the truth be told, that if you were eating more like a bioregional kind of way, I could get my potassium from plenty of sources that are more sustainable, like, potatoes and such. And
have more potassium in them.
Yeah, right.
So, yeah, had some great marketing group behind them the potassium,
right?
Because they do not have the most potassium.
Yep. It's really true. So,
yes.
I would miss my smoothie, but I'm sure I would find something. I don't know that I would put a potato in my smoothie, but I would miss my banana. But I think life would go on, right?
Yeah. So now just tell me quickly, before we move on to Dr. Campbell, a little bit about this conference, what it's all about, and where people can find out about it.
So basically 8 days, 8 days of really sort of immersing yourself in health from the standpoint of cooking and good food. The food's amazing, very, very healthy, so all of your meals are provided for you, and they're all really clean, healthy, lots of fruits and vegetables. And then the education, so bringing in great minds like Dr. Campbell to reiterate for us what the science is telling us and what the most recent science is telling us about the whole foods plant-based diet. Some fun excursions. They have a beautiful botanical gardens. There's a wonderful school that the Campbells support that we go to visit. And so you get to see some of that. And a beautiful resort. So you get all the rest and relaxation you can imagine right on the ocean on top of it. I met some wonderful people. Let me say the people that I met, I've made new friends in the first trip that I was there. And look forward to making more new friends again of like-minded people. Is a really amazing thing to do.
I was looking at the schedule really quickly, and one thing that I saw was that it's not packed from morning until night with speakers, which can get really tedious. It's stretch out.
Well, there's plenty of time to exercise. There's plenty of time to stretch out on the beach. Afternoons are yours. You can go on some of the excursions or not. And so it is wide open. So most of the education happens in the morning. There's a Q&A right before dinner. Then there's dinner. Then you're free in the evening. There's plenty of music down by the pool in the evenings if you want to go down and dance and do all that kind of stuff. But it's not like you're having this packed in so that you're exhausted at the end of 8 days. It's all about, you know, taking care of the entire being and getting some rest too.
Okay, Del, well, thanks for coming on the show. Just in a matter of minutes, a last minute thing. I really appreciate it, and I'm definitely going to open one of your books to make my cauliflower tonight, because you're the cauliflower king.
Make it happen. Nice talking to you, Karen.
Okay, take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye. That was Chef Del Saruf. And now I'm very happy to bring on Dr. T. Colin Campbell. He is the author of The China Study and some other wonderful books, including Whole. And Colin, are you there?
Yes, I am.
How are you today?
Good. Good to hear your voice again, Karen.
It's just an honor to speak with you. You've just done incredible things for so many decades, but right now I want to thank you for being a great dad.
Oh, thank you very much. Yeah.
Leanne sounded like things were really hectic and she had to take off and couldn't do the program, and she asked you and Del to give some of your time, take her place, and I really appreciate you doing that.
Well, thanks.
Okay, so what's new with you? What are you working on these days?
Well, a number of different things, too many things, but one of which is Tom, our youngest son, who now is a physician, as you probably know. He's directs a program in nutrition and medicine at the University of Rochester Medical Center. In any case, Tom and I are doing the second edition of the China Study. That will be out after the first of the year. We're supposed to be out a little before that, but that's what we're doing. And I'm still lecturing a lot, going places.
I'm curious,
sort of
what
involved
is
with the older son who directed the film of Plant Pure Nation, which is out now.
So you're not only a great author, but you're a movie star.
Oh, I don't know about that. It's kind of an accidental thing. I never planned that earlier in life, so whatever comes along.
Yes, well, you have amazing amount of energy. You're like one of these ever energizer batteries or whatever. They just keep going. And I imagine you're fueled on plants.
Yes, I'm eating the right food, like you are.
Eating the right food. What a difference it can make.
Yeah, for sure.
This new China study that's coming out, what can we expect to see in it? Are you going to talk about what the people in China are like today health-wise compared to when you first did the study?
A little bit, not too much, but basically we didn't change anything. I mean, the material we had in the first edition is still going to be there. What we did, we kind of went through and added some commentary here and there, but added some new material. There's a whole new chapter, now the largest chapter in the book, having to do with, advancing this message into a larger context, larger population. So it's much the same, but there'll be some really new stuff, I think. I don't know. It's a little bit about the Chinese situation. I mean, all societies tend to gravitate, as time passes, from their native diets originally to the typical diet we use here in the West, and we get in trouble. It's really what happens. So,
well, you've been fighting this fight, researching this topic for so many decades, and you've come upon so much resistance, and yet you've continued with grace and aplomb. Finally are getting the recognition you deserve, and people are starting to hear your message. But as you know, there's still many people who aren't getting it. I don't know if you saw this article in the Wall Street Journal a couple of weeks ago that was titled, "How Can Vegetarians Get Enough Protein?"
Oh, my God. That's as old as the hills.
And I don't know if you know Dr. David Saris, the director of medical nutrition at Columbia University Medical Center.
No, I don't.
Yeah, well, in this article, he was quoted saying a number of things, and I just can't believe it's 2016, and this is printed by a reputable doctor at a prestigious university, but he said a number of things I thought maybe you might comment on. He said, "It is my opinion that veganism is not consistent with human life because all vitamin B12 originated in an animal." That was one
thing
he
said. My answer to that is total nonsense. First off, B12 does not originate in animals. On that score alone, he's wrong. B12 is produced by microorganisms. And it just so happens ruminant animals have a lot of microorganisms in their rumen, essentially. We also produce some too, although it's not as available. But that's total nonsense. As far as veganism, to be honest about it, Karen, I know everyone uses the word vegan, but I have some difficulty with that word have from the very beginning. Namely, people became vegan or vegetarian, if you will, as we all know, primarily did so over the years for ideological reasons, animal rights reasons in particular, which is, it's fine for that, to make that decision that way. But I didn't come to that for that. I just simply was doing the research and came up with the idea that eating whole plant-based foods is based on really good science, and it really is. And vegans today, unfortunately, are the data really show that their average fat content is still around 30%. That's not so good. And their consumption on average of refined carbohydrates is not so good. I mean, they certainly have taken a step in the right direction, no question about that. But they're not quite able to do what the whole food plant-based diet can do.
Yes, and, I know. Also, with vegan Oreos out there, it just makes it hard for a lot of people.
That's right. And so what happens under circumstances like that is as they consume, especially high fat, without all of the other good stuff, the antioxidants and things like that, what happens, part of a significant proportion of their total calorie intake is taken up by this non-nutrient, energy-dense substance. And so their consumption of the antioxidants in the form of whole foods actually goes down. And then you add to that the refined carbohydrates on top of it. They're somewhat better than, let's say, the omnivores or the omnivores, but not that much better. And the same with vegetarians. Vegetarians, still 90% are using dairy and oftentimes eggs and fish. So their nutrient composition, too, is not as good as what it could be. And so I would like to make that distinction.
And I'm glad you did. It's important.
Yeah, it really is important in terms of the science. I mean, when I'm looking at the science and when I assess, let's say what effect food has on health, I'm primarily, focusing on the nutrient composition of those foods. And by that, I mean, that the food on average ought to be in the neighborhood of around 10% protein. By the way, whole plant-based foods have the ideal level of protein. The fellow at Columbia doesn't seem to know that, but they have the ideal level of protein, which was established many years ago. We called it the recommended dietary allowance. The minimum intake required is more in the neighborhood of 5, 6, 7%. So they added a couple of standard deviations to that to make sure that everybody got enough. That was established way back in 1943. And even at the early 1900s, it was shown then that people with protein intakes in the neighborhood of 4, 5, 6% did just fine. So we've had this, fascination, I guess you could say, with protein over the years. And most people tend to think protein means animal food. Or animal protein. And it's not, as we know. We got all the protein we need, ideal levels of protein, simply consuming whole plant-based foods.
Okay, we're talking about protein. I don't know where it was, but I remember reading something recently that said as we age, seniors need more protein.
Yes, that was a study that came out. People over, I can't remember what the cutoff point was.
Yeah, like 60
over
or
65. 65 or something like that. There was some evidence, but if you look at those data carefully, it was so minor as to have really, in my mind, been almost as much of a chance. It was barely significant, but You know, in, under that circumstance, to say that kind of thing, I think, has been really quite exaggerated. And I say that, the reason I say that is because all human studies, except for Dr. Esselt and Dr. Ornish, all human studies, the epidemiological studies, quite frankly, when they make statements about how much protein we should consume or how much fat or how much this or that, all the people in all those studies, none of those studies, which have been tens of thousands of those studies, none of them have people in those studies who are consuming a whole food plant-based diet. So I say it's inappropriate for researchers who are using those kinds of studies to speculate what might happen with whole food plant-based diets.
That's really a
major issue in terms of interpreting the science. So,
yeah, I wanted to remind you, I think the last time I saw you was at a book launch party or book signing party by Ben Bella Books when you came out with the book Whole.
Down in
Brooklyn at some little bowling alley pub place.
Right, I remember that. kind of a strange place. It worked.
It was a very interesting place. And I got maybe 4 or 5 copies of your book, and I didn't read it until like last month. But I'm glad I read it, and it's a great book.
Yeah, I'm excited. Actually, if anything, maybe more excited about Whole than I was the China study, because Whole was an attempt, at least on my part, to try to understand a little bit better why there's so much confusion about nutrition in the public. And why there's so much confusion amongst the professionals, including nutritional scientists in my community. And I finally came up with, I guess, an idea that partly old, partly new, I just find really, really exciting. And actually, I'm finding now that that book, Whole, is actually being used by quite a number of university classes for required or recommended reading.
Well, I'm very glad to hear that, because we do need a different paradigm when it comes to scientific study. And, it, you know, this whole reductionism thing you've mentioned in the book, it can be useful to some degree, but we nearly need to look at the whole system, not just one little thing. But it's so expensive to do lots of different experiments with a gazillion parameters.
It is. That in part was the basis for the China study, just in part, but there we collected as much information as we possibly could and then got involved in sort of combining some ideas and some observations and, you know, looking for patterns. And of course, that can be assessed statistically to some extent. And incidentally, I do have to add the comment that we did not assume causality from correlations. Some of the folks out there have criticize the China project itself because we did that. We did not. In fact, I lectured on exactly what they were concerned about. So the China study with lots of information, and we were basically looking for, I was at least looking for, the kind of patterns that made sense in terms of the other information that's available in the literature, or we did ourselves, you know, before doing the China study.
You know, so, I'm sure the criticism for the China study was very frustrating. And a lot of it, if you really understand what you're talking about, you know that they don't know what they're talking about. But I like to say, don't read your press, weigh it.
Yeah, I know. That's about right. Unfortunately, some of them are quite, they're backed up by some pretty big interest groups.
And, oh, sure, like the Western Price Foundation and all of their followers.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had a friend of mine ask me, he said, can you point me to one study that, basically he wanted to know the one study that tells it all, that really shows that a plant-based diet is superior or not. And, you know, I know that one study doesn't exist, and I basically said, read Whole, and you'll understand why I don't have an answer to that question. But just like people want one pill to fix
right,
a disease, they, you know, they want to see it in easy and see it in one place.
Yeah, that concept of Whole, I'm really finding more and more exciting as time passes. You know, I started out, as you know, with trying to get a feel for that concept by simply considering the inner workings of a cell. of which we have between 10 and 100 trillion cells in our body. And every cell is like a universe. Mm-hmm. And it's infinitely complex. I mean, I spent much of my early career sort of in the biochemical characteristics of the cell, and particularly in relation to nutrition. But those cells, you know, who can imagine how much is 10 and 100 trillion cells in our body? And one cell, you can sit on the head of a pin, and you can't see it. It's that small. But we got trillions of those cells, each one of which is like a universe. And so you see all these reactions going on inside of the cell. We know that. And we know, you know, and it's changing, you know, every nanosecond of time, even shorter periods of time. And so you get this extraordinary dynamic going on. And it's basically nature at work is really what
it
is.
Well, this is fascinating. And I want to leave people with that thought of imagining all of these trillions of universes within our bodies. And if you want to hear more, know more about Dr. Campbell, you can go to the Total Health Conference, right?
Yes, that's good. That's very exciting. I like the format for the conference in particular. I've lectured there both times that Leanne did that, but it's really relaxing. I heard what Dell said, and it's a different kind of experience, and you can relax and really talk and get involved in some serious discussions at the same time. It's really nice.
Yes, well, here's an opportunity to have questions given right to you and get your answers.
I guess, yeah. At least
okay,
make a comment they can comment on.
Yeah, great. Well, Dr. Campbell, thank you for joining me. Thank you for everything you've done and continue to do. And have a great time at the Total Health Conference.
Thanks very much, Karen, for inviting me on. Okay.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye. Well, that was Dr. T. Colin Campbell, and he and Del Sroof are some of the speakers that will be at the Global Roots Total Health Conference. And if you want to know more about it, you can go to Responsible Eating and Living and look at the information for this show that we just had today, and you can click on the links to get to that information. Whew. And we've come to the end of the show. Thank you for joining me. And I wanted to say, whoo, not only did Lee Chantel celebrate her 10th anniversary of her website, but we're celebrating the one-year anniversary of my blog, What Vegans Eat. It happened 4 or 5 days ago. So thank you for supporting that. And we're celebrating. Woo-hoo! All right. So thank you for tuning in. Love today, and have a delicious week.